So this morning, we returned to the story of Ruth and Naomi to explore how their story concluded. Last week, if you remember, we reflected on how Ruth's godly character, where she made the brave decision to remain present to Naomi even in the midst of a vulnerable situation. In doing so, Ruth was demonstrating hesed, which is that Hebrew term of loving kindness and faithfulness. Well, this week, we got to witness how that story played out. They had returned to Naomi's homeland, as they anticipated, back to Judah. And from there, Ruth went out, and she had gathered leftover grain in the fields of a man named Boaz. Boaz and Ruth wound up meeting, and he provided some protection and some water for her as she gathered, and then he invited her to gather much more grain than she had anticipated. When she returned to Naomi and shared about this experience, she found out through Naomi that Boaz was actually her relative. And this meant that Boaz had the potential to be a kinsman redeemer, which was a relative in that particular social context who could step in and assist in helping to avoid them, to avoid poverty and isolation. So at that point, Naomi hatched a very clever plan to bring Boaz and Ruth together. Here we see how Ruth's commitment and presence to Naomi was met with blessing and benefit in the long term. You say, Naomi knew that during the harvest, Boaz could be found at the threshing floor at nighttime. The threshing floor was this location where they would bring the grain they had harvested in sheaves. And in order to prepare it, they'd bring it there and they would separate out the actual edible grain part from all of the extra chaff. And then all that extra chaff would blow away from the threshing floor as the evening winds would come in and pick up. The threshing workers would work late into the evening and then they would sleep there because they needed to guard all of their hard work. It was known that sometimes thieves would come in the night and try to steal away all the grain that had been prepared. And so threshers would stay overnight to protect it. Now Naomi anticipated all of this. And so she instructed Ruth to get all gussied up and to go meet Boaz there, but to wait until he had had his fill of food and beverage. She specifically told her to wait until he lay down and then to uncover his feet and lie down as well, and to await further instruction. Now Ruth, in her ever loyal way, was immediately telling Naomi yes, she would do as instructed. And she essentially did. Now over the years, there has been plenty of speculation about what sort of tone we are to take away from this plan of theirs. The details of Naomi's instruction do seem to suggest that there is a seductive layer to what is happening here, to what she is calling Ruth to do. And there are even clues and hints in the original language that are pointing to that as well. However, some people have turned in a different direction because they, I don't know if it's an uncomfortability with that idea, but they try to keep it strictly about the cultural process of trying to unite two people in marriage and say it was all about that, there was nothing seductive about it. But frankly, the text seems to weave those things together. I think honestly, especially as we think about that cultural context, the idea of marriage and the physical consummation of marriage were very interwoven ideas in that time. And so it does make logical sense as we read the plain instructions she is given that's essentially what's going on. Either way, we ought to acknowledge that this is a plan that is a bit of a gamble. There was no telling for sure how Boaz would respond. And as a foreign female widow, it wouldn't have taken much for Ruth to be cast out or even punished with deadly force. Should Boaz have misinterpreted her effort or rejected her effort all out? And yet Naomi took that gamble and sent that instruction their way. Perhaps they were in just such a dire situation that this is what they had to try. This was the next step. But thanks be to God, it did not get misinterpreted and it did not get rejected. Ruth and Boaz's interaction, it demonstrated yet again their utter loyalty to their families and their commitment to doing the right thing. It seems they were a very good match in that regard. So once Boaz went out and cleared the way to indeed become the next in line kinsman redeemer, we get to fast forward to the joyous result. We missed it in the readings this morning, so I want to share with you. This is towards the end, chapter 4, 13 through 17. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When they came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom and became his nurse. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. And so as we fast forward to that ending result, we get to celebrate because they got married. God blessed them with a son, Obed, who would prove to be the new start and opportunity so that they would not have to suffer on the margins of society after all. So we get that lovely happy ending where through the faithful actions of Ruth and Naomi, God preserves their family. But what I find truly wondrous about this is that the happy ending and the good news of this story is radically multi-layered in ways that Naomi and Ruth never would have even imagined in their lifetimes. The first layer is that immediate good news we just talked about. Ruth and Naomi's loyalty and love for one another has been met with God's blessing. They are isolated no more. They have Boaz and Obed as part of their family, and they find themselves surrounded by a community of other women who are celebrating and praising God as they hear the news. The women are even the ones that come along and name the child. They name him Obed, meaning servant, as they anticipate his value as a restorer and nourisher of the family. So Ruth and Naomi are not only full family members again, but they are now surrounded by a community that is celebrating them for their acts of hesed presence. But that is only the first layer. The second layer of good news is coming right at the end of the text here, giving a fuller view of God's preservation. Obed turns out to be the grandfather of David. David, God's chosen king over all of Israel. So as we take a slightly bigger picture view, we see that Ruth and Naomi's bravery and loyalty wound up enabling the lineage of David to go on. Their faithful actions were interwoven with God's covenant promise to sustain his people, stemming all the way back to Abraham. Now, this was a layer of good news that they maybe didn't even recognize. But we do know that whoever recorded the story of Ruth understood the significance of this, as they made a point to reveal that connection of the lineage later in the conclusion of the story. But even that is just the second layer. The third layer of good news, the third demonstration of God's preservation, is far beyond the perception of Ruth and Naomi and even the writer of this story. Because way down the road, the covenant promise through the lineage of David paved the way for the incarnation of Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, God with us, who came among us fully God, fully human, to bring salvation and restoration to the world. The same Jesus Christ who spoke to the utter value of a poor widow's contribution in the gospel reading today. I think that's a full circle. So now in this zoomed out big picture, we wonder in awe at the notion of God's covenant promise being fulfilled through Christ's birth here on earth, all being connected back to this one particular story of Ruth and Naomi's commitment and faith. And now, a fourth layer, Here we sit in Traverse City, Michigan, in 2021, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, whose lives have been transformed by God's love, whose mission is to share that love. And we can pause a moment in hindsight here and acknowledge that our little stories, in a long and winding way, are only possible because of God's covenant promise made through Ruth and Naomi. It was all channeled through them, even in a grave situation in which they stepped up in courage, trust, and faithful action, and now here we are. It's amazing to reflect back in that hindsight and help see the ways that God is preserving and providing for God's beloved community. And it's not just this story, it's all over the place. It reminds me of the origin story of a woman named Agnes. About 100 years ago, Agnes was a teenager in the Albanian region, and she was very close to her mother Drana, especially after her father had experienced a tragic death early on. Now, Agnes's mother Drana was committed to serving the poor in their area. Though they didn't have much, she regularly invited the poor to come have dinner with them. And she used to tell young Agnes, "My child, never eat a single mouthful unless you are sharing it with others." Well, that experience was very formative for Agnes, to the point where she sensed a call from God to take a similar line of work. Down the road, she became a nun, she moved to another country, she became a teacher. But over time, she sensed an even narrowed and more specific call from God to go and serve the poorest and the sickest people in her city. She went on to establish healthcare opportunities specifically for those who had none before, and there were a lot. She served relentlessly. And her devotion, Agnes's devotion, grew into a global movement to serve the poor and the sick. Now, you might better know Agnes by the name she took when she completed her final vows, Mother Teresa. Now, what is so fascinating to me is to think about the massive impact that Mother Teresa had, and then to connect it, to trace it all the way back to that one little detail in her life, which was her mother, Drana, committed to sharing the occasional meal with a poor person. Now, in hindsight, we can marvel at how that small faithful activity interwove with God's will for her child's life. And that had positive implications down the road for countless suffering people. It's a powerful thing to get that hindsight glimpse of God's layers of preservation. So today, as we go out into the next chapter of our own little particular stories, let's keep that in mind. Let's recall that the little moments we experience, the little acts of love or kindness we can muster up, those moments are interweaving with God's will for this world, right here and now. And we might get to experience a layer or two of how God could use our small acts of devotion. But in reality, we can also pause and wonder at how God might just use the tiniest bit of our commitment to spread an immeasurable amount of goodness in this world. We can trust confidently that those layers of preservation are present and sustaining us even now, from generations past and for generations still to come. And that's a reminder I think we all need, especially in seasons of great change and in crisis. For us particularly, we are still a church body without a head pastor, a church that has been through several rigors of transition in a handful of times in recent years, not to mention a church navigating a once-in-a-century pandemic that just doesn't quite want to let go. We look around and we see some things that aren't what they once were, for better or for worse. But all of those changes, regardless, that can lead to fear and to doubt, to anxiety, big questions that do not always have clear answers. So in the midst of all that going on inside of us and around us, I invite you to pause, to breathe, and to remember the wondrous layers of God's preservation. To remember the covenant promise to God's people, of which we get to be a part, not by anything we did, but by the grace of God. To remember that the Holy One is preserving us through the wise leadership of our session elders, through the caring commitment of our deacons, through the creative efforts of our staff, through the ongoing support of all of our committee members, so on and so forth, through each and every moment of loving kindness, selfless service that you are all bestowing on one another and in this community. So let's discern together how to act faithfully that our efforts might be interwoven with the divine will for the world. Blessed be the Lord, who has not left us, but shall restore our lives and nourish our souls. Thanks be to God.